WBEZ is supported by the Gynecology Research Lab at Endeavor Health. Period pain affects millions of people. Researchers want to learn from those experiencing period pain. The NIH-funded study wants to know whether a common over-the-counter medication can reduce period pain over time. Compensation is available. Learn more at cureperiodpain.org.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around to the very end of the episode to get a rundown of the latest news. But first, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, it helps millions of people across the country put food on the table. But it's safe to say the program's going through some of its biggest changes in years. That's because the Trump administration is pushing more of the cost and responsibility onto states, while also adding new work requirements and other updates that could affect who qualifies to get benefits. So what does this all mean for people who live in Illinois? In this episode of the pod, we're going to dig into that question, and we'll learn what options state lawmakers have as the future of SNAP remains uncertain. At the table with me was Nolan Downey, who's Senior Director of Policy for the Greater Chicago Food Depository, Carolyn Barnes, who's Associate Professor at the Crown Family School at UChicago, and Illinois State Rep Dagmara D. Avalar of the 85th District. Now, let's rewind the clock a bit. Before the Trump administration made these recent changes, how has SNAP traditionally been funded? I asked Professor Barnes to explain. Here she is.
So historically, SNAP has been funded by the Farm Bill, and it's been considered an entitlement, meaning the federal government covers the cost of benefits. There has been historically a cost-sharing agreement between the federal government and states where the administrative budget is covered 50% by the federal government, 50% by states. And there has been work requirements in the past, but they were far less broad as they are now. Primarily targeting folks that don't have dependents, so able-bodied adults without dependents, through 59.
So the administrative costs bundled in there have traditionally been paid by the federal government, too, right? They would cover the full cost of SNAP benefits.
They'd cover the full cost of SNAP benefits and share half of the administrative budget with
50-50.
States. 50-50.
50-50 yep, with the states. Right. And Nolan, so we're clear, what exactly has changed since Trump signed that one big, beautiful bill last year?
So much has changed. I mean, as we all know, that bill contained historic, unprecedented, and cruel cuts to the social safety net. As Dr. Barnes has mentioned, we've already seen expanded work requirements and harsh immigrant eligibility restrictions kick off lawfully present humanitarian immigrants, kick off people who have never been subject to work requirements, thousands of people losing benefits in the state already. But now the change that's coming in the years ahead is this shift in costs from the federal government to the state. And to put those two buckets of costs into context, SNAP benefits bring $4 billion worth of money into the state. That's money that is important for our state economy. Those administrative costs also significant, but there we're talking about tens of millions of dollars. So what the state has historically shouldered is much, much smaller. Now a portion of that $4 billion is being shifted onto states, which could create a future financial obligation that is up to $700 million.
Wow.
And if the state does not pay that, we lose the program entirely. So the stakes are incredibly high for Illinois and for states across the country.
So that 50-50 that we just talked about with Professor Barnes is now 25-75 being from the states, right? So I got to bring you in now, a representative, because you know what Nolan just brings up is pretty jarring, right? Because on top of these increased administrative costs, the federal government wants to shift what could be as much as $705 million to Illinois to sustain this SNAP program. What's your reaction?
That is correct. My reaction, I mean, this is one of the things that keeps me up at night and several of my colleagues at night, because we are looking at, ever since, I refuse to call it that bill, I just call it H.R. 1, because the truth is that it's doing so much damage to our communities, whether it is SNAP, whether it's Medicaid. You know, when it comes to eligibility, we are just seeing a lot of the burden shifted to states. And the truth is that while here in Illinois, we have been successful in just passing our eighth balanced budget, the truth is that the more pressure that we get from the feds, that gap is going to continue to increase and increase. And at the state level, we just won't have the, currently, with the revenues that we have, we won't be able to fill that gap. So it definitely is a pressure point that we as legislators have continued to talk about. We don't go back into session until November, but that doesn't mean that the conversations have not been happening to figure out
right. What
do we do.
Well, what I'm hearing you say, on top of, you know, really emphasizing the pressure point that our state is under, we can't afford it.
That's right.
We can't afford this shift in cost burden.
Yeah, it's historical. Mm-hmm. It's historical. It's never done before. Since the beginning of the program, we haven't had to do this, and it's just irresponsible.
So, Professor, I mean, not all states, as I understand it, would have to take on more financial burden to fund SNAP. So why does Illinois need to pay up?
So all states are going to be subject to this new cost-sharing agreement around the administration of the program. So they're going to have to cover 75% instead of 50. But what the federal government has done through H.R. 1 is essentially make an entitlement program conditional on performance. And the performance metric they care about is this error rate. There are two performance metrics that matter for SNAP. It's accuracy and speed. Mm-hmm. But they care a lot about accuracy because there's this too much emphasis on fraud. So now...
You're talking about like overpaying,
overpaying or underpaying
people.
Yes, overpaying or underpaying. So now states that have an error rate that's higher than 6% are going to be subject to covering portions of that SNAP benefit, which they didn't have to before. And Illinois' error rate exceeds 6%. Mm.
Is it about 13% or more than 13%?
More than 13%. So they're on the hook.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nolan, what else can you say about error rates and how they're factoring in here?
Well, listen, there are a couple of things to note here. Payment errors are, you know, this is a metric that has existed in the program for a long time. To put it in the simplest terms, this is a measure of whether people on the program were paid the right amount of SNAP. Sometimes people receive a little bit over, sometimes people receive a little bit under. SNAP, like many income-based programs, there are many financial and non-financial factors that determine people's eligibility and benefit amount. Any small discrepancy with any number of those factors mm-hmm. could lead to what they call a payment error. These errors are overwhelmingly the result of innocent, unintentional mistakes. These could be mistakes by recipients themselves, by state workers, by the state's computer system. It is not fraud. We need to state that clearly. Fraud in the SNAP program is exceedingly low. We're talking about 0.1% of families who are investigated, not found guilty of, investigated for fraud. Fraud does not meaningfully exist in these programs, but nonetheless, this metric now is shifting hundreds of millions of dollars of future costs to state. And I mean, I should say, $700 million is a lot of money.
Yeah.
There's no question about it.
Right.
I really appreciate Representative Avalar talking about the state needing to prepare now for what we can do. It is a big number. But this is, the stakes are so high. You know, I think that what we really can't afford is to not pay this bill.
Yeah.
We know that at the federal level, we're going to do everything we can so that eventually all of the damage that's been done to H.R. 1 is reversed in its entirety. That is our goal. That needs to be our focus. But until that goal is achieved, we cannot afford to lose this program at the state level. And mm-hmm. if there is a bill to be paid, as unjust as it is, we've got to pay it to keep people fed in this state.
Well, I want to stay right there because, you know, we are talking about essentially a lot of technical things, right? Error rates and operational costs and things like that. But I want to hear from each of you. What is fundamentally the most concerning piece of this to you? Rep?
I would say for me is we're going to have a chilling effect of people who qualify for SNAP not wanting to apply for SNAP. And we've seen that. We've seen that as being a tactic to cost cutting. And that's what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid of the fact that we're going to have people who qualify for SNAP not apply.
Professor Barnes?
I echo that. So when you said that these cost-sharing agreements kept you up at night, I felt that. I've been saying that for the last year. I think this is all designed to discourage people from participating. And we know early evidence suggests that children are disproportionately affected. So I'm worried about hungry kids.
Mm. Nolan, is this just another way to gut the SNAP program?
Absolutely. All of H.R. 1 is intended to degrade our social safety net. As we stated, these are historic cuts in terms of their scope and their depth. So all of this, however the rhetoric is tied up, we should not be fooled into thinking that this is anything other than just an attempt to degrade the social safety net mm-hmm. and to increase the suffering of people who are already struggling to get by in this
country.
Can this
be reversed?
It must be. It must be. I mean, our elected officials at the federal level need to keep their eyes on the prize here. This is something that has to be undone, and it needs to be undone as quickly as possible.
Representative Avila, could we take this to the courts?
I hope so. Absolutely. I mean, a lot of the work that we're doing at the state level, while we've been able to pass a lot of legislation to what I'd like to call Trump-proof the state of Illinois, this is something that a special shout out to our attorney general and his team
Raul.
Of staff, yes, who have been fighting the fight. We've been fighting the fight at the legislative level. But there's also the fight that's happening right now, not just in the state of Illinois, but with all these other states who are currently being impacted.
Mm-hmm. On the surface, Professor Barnes, I mean, incentivizing states to make fewer mistakes administering SNAP benefits, that could sound like a good thing. Mm-hmm. Why is it not that simple?
Well, I would argue that it's an effort to gut programs under the guise of improving systems and efficiency and performance. Mm. But you don't divest in systems and people when you want to see improvement. You invest in people and systems. So to punish states who have already struggled to perform along these metrics for decades, it's not helping, it's harming. So in that sense, I view this as a hidden way of gutting the program, like Nolan said. Mm-hmm. Like, let's figure out ways to not make this a salient SNAP cut, but use these sort of administrative mechanisms to deter people from participating in the program altogether.
Sure, and the fact that we're already down, right? I want to give more context for folks who are listening. More than 37 million people across the country received SNAP benefits in March. This is according to preliminary Department of Ag figures. That's actually down nearly 5 million people, about 11% from the previous year. This is all reporting from the Chicago Tribune. So we're already down, and it looks like, in your words, an attempt to keep that going, right? Keep mm-hmm. that decrease going. What are you and lawmakers talking about right now? Because you see the problem. What are you and your peers discussing? What can you do? What is in your power?
Yeah, I think that part of what we've been doing is looking at priorities. And when I say priorities is based on H.R. 1, there are certain populations that are going to get kicked out this year. Okay. So in response to that, and I'm very proud of the work that we've been able to do in the General Assembly, we were able to put as part of the budget the FRESH program, which is a program where eligible people will be receiving a $400 monthly one-time, actually, I should say, benefit to help cover food and basic needs. This is specifically for people who might get kicked out due to work requirements.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the FRESH program. I should clarify, that's the Families Receiving Emergency Support for Hunger.
That is correct.
Program.
Mm-hmm.
What isn't working right now with the system, Nolan? If you had to just dissect it, what is the biggest issue right now?
I mean, I think right now I have a lot of sympathy for states that are trying to implement these incredibly complex changes, seismic changes to programs. They're trying to do it on a tight timeline. They've been trying to do it at one point in the midst of the longest federal government shutdown that we've ever had, where they received very little technical assistance or guidance from the federal government. And they're dealing with a federal government that is fundamentally hostile mm-hmm. toward benefits recipients. And so states, I think, are really struggling to implement these changes with compassion. So states like Illinois, who want to have that approach, you know, we've done, I think, work that, to Representative Avalar's point, we should be incredibly proud of. But the federal government is not making it easy on states. And to Dr. Barnes' point, these are already systems that are strained. Human services sectors across the country are already historically disinvested in. And so yeah. this additional strain and pressure is bringing these systems to the brink.
What are you thinking, Professor Barnes? I see you nodding. I'm also wondering your thoughts on the timing of this. Why is this happening now?
That's a good question. I think that there's always been pressure to make the safety net smaller. I think we've come off of an historical period of safety net expansion under the Biden administration, and we've seen the pendulum swing in the opposite direction. I think this is a partisan ideological fight, honestly. Mm. And I view this as sort of a political tool, these changes as a political tool to reduce the size of the safety net, to reduce people's demands on the state. Like if I receive a program from the federal government, I'm invested in who's my elected official that's going to be representing my interest to protect that program. Right. So if I reduce these programs, I'm essentially shaping constituencies moving forward. I think we're at a turning point. This could go one way where people are mobilized and they say, I want to protect my Medicaid and I want to protect my SNAP. Or it could go another way where people are demobilized and assume that the state doesn't care about them. And they become, apathetic about participating.
Representative, I got to get your response to that, because, this is such a contentious political issue right now. Why do you think that is?
I think that there's this notion of, there's somebody gains when you pit communities against each other, right? And, as we were talking, I just kept thinking about one of the things that grind my gears with H.R. 1. H.R. 1 gave significant tax credits to corporations. And when we look at SNAP, a lot of SNAP recipients are people who are actively working, but yet their jobs do not offer benefits,
right,
or they don't even make enough to be able to afford health insurance. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, when we think about this, it's just, I'm speechless just about the amount of hate that is coming for the working poor.
Mm. And I'm still thinking about what Professor Brown said earlier about the impact on children. So many children are impacted when you make changes and make cuts and gut SNAP. So my final question to all of you, what are you looking out for next? Nolan?
I would just say children are impacted, the working poor are impacted, but truly when these programs, SNAP, Medicaid, programs that are load-bearing pillars of society are weakened to this extent, we are all impacted. So the stakes are incredibly high, not just for folks that depend on these programs to go to the doctor to get food, but losing the revenue from SNAP. Again, if we face the loss of this program in its entirety, that's $4 billion out of the state economy. That's jobs lost. That's retailers closing. That's communities that no longer have access to food. That impacts all of us. So I think everyone needs to be invested in reversing these changes. And to Representative Avalar's point, changes that were done, and we should never forget, were done to make the wealthier in this country just even more wealthy. Mm-hmm. We should condemn that as forcefully as we can.
Professor Barnes?
I think I'm looking forward to seeing how people speak up and speak out about these programs. I've been really impressed with the level of advocacy in Illinois, both with organizations like the Chicago Food Depository, but also ordinary people that are ready to fight to protect these programs. So that's inspiring.
Yeah. And Representative?
I am very much looking forward to continuing to do the work that we've been doing in the Illinois General Assembly in collaboration, I would also say, with our congresspeople. Many of our congresspeople, I thank them for their service, especially in such tremendous, horrible times that we're living in. But as a state, I think that we continue and will continue to fight for making sure that Illinois families are treated with dignity and respect.
We'll leave it there for now. That's Illinois State Rep. Dagmara D. Avalar of the 85th District. We've also been talking with Carolyn Barnes, who's an associate professor at the Crown Family School at UChicago, and Nolan Downey, who's a senior director of policy for the Greater Chicago Food Depository. Thank you all so much. Thanks for sticking with us. Now we'll turn to the top news stories of the day with WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane, Chicago Sun-Times reporter Mary Norkel, and Sun-Times assistant editor Nader Issa.
Get this, there was a 2.9 magnitude earthquake in Lake Michigan yesterday. So Claire kicked things off with the details.
Geological Survey officials say that the earthquake happened around 2:40 in the afternoon, to be precise.
Okay, I was there.
You were in the lake.
I was not in the lake, but I was on the shoreline.
Lake adjacent.
But I felt nothing.
It depends how north you were. So this was recorded about 14 miles northeast of suburban Evanston.
Okay.
So if you were on the south side, you probably didn't feel it.
Yeah.
Residents reported feeling a little bit of the quake. Places like Highland Park, Skokie, and Libertyville, even as far west as that. GNTV reporting that at least one other earthquake was recorded in the lake in August of 2024.
Interesting.
So
we'll
see, you know, if this, how common this is. I think we're going to do some reporting on this, WBZ.
Absolutely. Did anyone else feel this?
I didn't even know we could have earthquakes, so that's a new fear unlocked now.
Now we can really be serious when we tell non-Chicagoans that the lake's like an ocean.
Right, exactly. And so earthquakes and lots of sunshine, but also the rain is back, Claire? Why?
Yes.
Why is it back?
And it's not going to be as bad. I mean, now we hear the word rain, and people really have to prepare for the worst. Mary, I know you've been doing reporting on this, but we are going to get some rain likely this afternoon. Some heavy rain could find us early evening hours, and then we're going to cool off a bit. 70s over the weekend. So if you've been feeling hot and humid, we're going to get some relief. But then by the end of next week, back in the 90s.
Back in the 90s.
So it goes.
Well, Mary, Claire teased there that you have been doing some reporting on this. You've been talking about flooded basements, right?
Yes, that's yes.
One of the repercussions there.
Flooded rivers, flooded reservoirs.
Yes.
Yeah, so essentially what's happening is deep tunnel, which is the system of reservoirs and tunnels out in the west side, just outside the city and southwest, it's almost full. And that's never happened before. They've never really come close, but we just got pounded with rain. And now some of the reservoirs are over 90% full. So people are really warning of, you know, what could happen if those flood. And
you talked to experts, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah, at the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District and the National Weather Service as well. And they just advise basically to be prepared for any flooding. And it's best to prepare early. But if you haven't yet, there are some short-term things you can do if you're a homeowner or property owner, mainly to redirect any downspouts away from going directly into the sewer. And you can, you know, direct them toward a rain garden, which is another tip they have, is to create a rain garden.
What about rain barrels? They gave you that tip too.
Yes. Yeah. Rain barrels are basically just what it sounds like, a big barrel that can hold about 50 gallons of water. And it's just a container for it. So it can be used for irrigation or other things to kind of mitigate the effects of lots and lots of rain, which we saw last week, and we have more coming.
And this isn't all on the homeowners, right? The city of Chicago is launching this pilot program trying to address this flooding problem.
Yes. So this is also going to be on the west side in Austin. The city and the Water Reclamation District are splitting the $12 million cost to get some underground water storage in Austin, basically to update the existing sewer system, which can only feasibly handle about 2 inches of rain at a time. Last week, we saw much, much more than that, closer to 7 or 8 inches. So that program is expected to be complete by the fall, and I guess we'll see how much it helps.
Yeah. Let's talk health, Nader. Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson's just named the new head of the city's health department.
Yeah, he did, and he still has to be confirmed by the city council, but the mayor has named Dr. Garth Walker. He's the chief medical officer at Rush Health on the Near West Side. He's a lifelong Chicagoan. He's said that this is sort of the culmination of his life's work to finally get this job. And it's a big job. It's a very political one. His predecessor infamously was fired by Mayor Brandon Johnson after she clashed with the Chicago Teachers Union over reopening schools during the COVID-19 pandemic. And it's a lot of work. The department, the Chicago Department of Public Health, it deals from everything from, you know, looking at restaurants and health codes, also pandemics. And in Chicago in particular, it's a very segregated city, as we know. And our colleague Kristen Schorsch, WBEZ, she's done a wonderful job investigating mm-hmm. a death gap in Chicago. It's the largest of any big city in the country. And
right.
so there's a lot from short-term to long-term health impacts that he's going to have to work on.
Now, Walker would replace Dr. Simbo Ige. Now, she resigned back in May. This was after about 2.5 years on the job. Do we have insight as to why she left?
All we know is that the mayor asked for her resignation. And, you know, like I mentioned a second ago, I was mistaken. Dr. Allison already was before Dr. Ige.
That's right.
And, you know, this is now two public health commissioners that the mayor has forced out in some way. And you're hoping
that's right, because already was right at the start of his term.
Exactly. Yeah. And very harshly forced her out and fired her. And so, you know, Dr. Ige.
Oh, Dr. Walker.
Yeah, Dr. Ige leaves now after the mayor's resignation. And, you know, she only served for 2.5 years, and she was the mayor's handpicked choice to replace Dr. Arvidy. So, yeah, you're hoping now that Dr. Walker can tie up loose ends that the mayor wants.
You saying Arvidy just reminds me of how of a public-facing role really is. I mean, people really look to. I mean, even just
she was everywhere.
It was
everywhere.
Like Chicago's Dr. Fauci.
I mean, I talked to her several times
totally.
A week.
And you sort of have to be pretty accessible and comfortable talking to the media, too, and talking to folks, residents.
Yeah, heading up the Chicago Department of Public Health is a big deal, folks. Now, Claire, the Chicago Transit Board, it's increasing the number of cameras on buses. This is as an expansion of the automated bus lane enforcement program continues. What should we know here?
So essentially, you know, it's a crackdown on people who are parking in the bus-only lanes as well as some of those bike lanes. Transit Board approved the expansion of this yesterday. 46 additional buses are now going to have these sort of special cameras that can monitor these and essentially be a proof point to really, you know, put these offenders or these violators on the line, you know, having them pay a ticket or some kind of fee if they get caught doing this. But this is all part of the expansion of Chicago's Smart Streets pilot. And it really is, you know, another, you know, thing that we're seeing happen with money that is coming from the Northern Illinois Transit Authority Act. So this is being funded with $1 million, those cameras from that act. So we'll see, you know, what they can drum up and if then they're going to expand on the 46 cameras. But essentially, that's what they are, cameras on buses, and they're trying to catch you parking in a bus lane.
All right. Well, the U.S. Department of Justice is threatening to prosecute Illinois election officials. What's going on there, Claire?
Yeah, this is ongoing, a little saga, but the U.S. Department of Justice, again, fighting for sensitive Illinois voter data. They want the data. This time, the Fed sent a warning letter to our election officials saying that we could be facing some criminal charges for sending non-citizens' ballots and then counting them. So okay. State Board of Elections spokesperson says this never happens. And the agency's legal team is weighing an official response to this, but that's so far what they are saying. DOJ has previously sued Illinois and more than 24 other states for full access. You know, they want to get as much information, as much voter registration data as they can. But previously, federal judges have dismissed many of those cases. So we'll see if that's what happens this time as well.
Interesting. And while you're in the hot seat, tell me what else you are following. There's so much news.
Everything. I'm following everything.
There's so much
all
news.
The time. But some fun stuff. Emmy noms came out. Mm-hmm. As we know, The Bear is in its fifth and final season. It got nominated in 8 Emmy categories.
Excellent.
Among them, Outstanding Comedy Series, which is kind of, you know, people go back and forth about that. Is it a dramedy? Is it a comedy? Emmy seemed to think it's in the comedy category.
I mean, it's not funny, haha.
I feel like it's so
inside.
It can
inside. Be, though.
It can
sometimes.
Be.
It can be.
Okay. Yeah, it has some deep
but
cuts.
There's quite a bit of drama.
Very much so. And IOE Debri received a nomination for Best Lead Actress. So that's a kudos to her.
I love that.
And also, if we remember in season 4, the late Rob Reiner was a guest actor. And so he is up for Outstanding Guest Actor Performance as an award for the Emmys. So we'll see if he gets that. The Emmys not till September. But The Bear is streaming now. Yeah. I watched all of it over the weekend.
Very good.
I binged it.
How'd you feel? Thumbs up or thumbs down?
I was satisfied.
Okay. All right. No spoilers.
No spoilers.
Mary's looking. Mary's giving you the eye like, girl, if you say one word. All right. Let's pivot to some other news here, Mary. We got CTA officials talking crime here. They're giving an update saying the city's trains and buses are safer. Crime's significantly down, they say, compared to last year. What should we know?
Yes. So at a briefing, I believe it was yesterday, our colleague David Struitt was at and reported that there's been a drop in crime for six consecutive months. This follows a trend of increasing crime for years, I think 5 years. And so CTA has been beefing up its security, particularly on the Red Line. Mm-hmm. And the Red Line itself has seen a 76% drop in violent crime since this time last year, and a 47% drop in crime, overall crime, in that same time frame. So
they're saying
it seems
the beef
to be
up
working.
Of security is what's really the cause here?
That's what they say, yes. And they also made an interesting point about kind of the perception of, you know, anytime there's a high profile violent crime in the CTA, people have their own perspective on that. And so they're trying to not only decrease crime, but, you know, also make sure people have an idea that it is safe to take the CTA. And so I think between, you know, the beefed up security and their, you know, kind of public service campaign,
awareness.
I think they're trying to, you know, encourage people to come back to taking the CTA.
Just letting folks know we're on this. We hear the concerns and we're taking care of it.
Right.
Nader, let's talk sports. World Cup quarterfinals begin today with Morocco versus France. I got to ask, who are you pulling for?
Big game.
Huge.
I think France, if only because we need them to beat Argentina in the final. Big Argentina hater over here.
To think the long game.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have witnessed, you know, as the excitement and all that has been going on for several weeks now, we've also witnessed a pretty significant shift in tone of the tournament in the last week. International football governing body FIFA is under fire. This is after making some questionable refereeing decisions in the last few games.
Yeah, I think I have a pretty good barometer on the level of controversy, and it's whether my group chats are lighting up or not. And so any given time in the past week, my friend's group chat or my brother's friend's group chat, it's like 98 unread messages every time I look at my phone. So there is a big controversy involving the U.S. men's national team. A player, after receiving a red card, has had his suspension overturned because President Donald Trump called FIFA President Gianni Infantino. And so that caused a worldwide uproar. There have also been very questionable refereeing decisions in a few games, most notably Egypt versus Argentina. A lot of people upset, including myself, about the calls in that one. And it seemed to sway the outcome of the game, which I think is what a lot of people care about.
That's no fair.
As long as refereeing decisions are good or bad, just don't let them affect the outcome.
Well, there's also, sadly, some racist abuse claims going on, too. Lots of headlines swirling around that. What should we know?
There have been a lot, most notably French superstar Kylian Mbappe after France played Paraguay. A Paraguayan senator made some extremely racist comments, slurs, a lot of very, very harsh and racist commentary.
And you're talking about a person in office, a
She's
senator.
In office in Paraguay, yeah. So there was a lot of backlash for that, calls for her resignation. The Egypt coach, in the sort of chaos at the end of the Egypt versus Argentina match, put up a gesture, sort of making an X with his arms that's meant to indicate there was some sort of racist incident. Mm. And the referee didn't really respond to that. He instead gave the coach a yellow card. And then a lot of people might know Twitch streamer iShowSpeed. There have been videos, a lot of games, where he's sort of received racist abuse from Argentinian fans.
Yeah, those are going viral.
And he's a big Cristiano Ronaldo fan, big rivalry with Argentina and Lionel Messi, and, you know,
sheesh.
But the rivalry with the Argentina fans has stepped way over the line, and he's received racist abuse.
Drama. All right, before I let you go, anyone heading to the Taste of Chicago this weekend, doing anything fun? Mary?
What's on the docket this weekend? I just want to spend some time in the sun, honestly. If it's nice, I'll be at the lake.
Yeah, when we're not having that rain that Claire just told us about.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah. Hopefully it's short-lived.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited for I think it's 35-mile bike ride I'm doing Sunday morning.
So amazing.
Should be fun.
Best of luck to you.
There's a pool at the end of it, so it's an exciting day.
Nice reward. Mary Norkel and Nader Issa with the Sun-Times and WBEZ's Claire Lane.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Micah Yasin. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.